At Cool Air Products, we developed AC Smart Seal Quick Shot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's 3-in-1, with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
Listen, using a combustion analyzer is really important this day and age to ensure our gas-fired equipment is running efficiently and it's running safely. Because if we don't have an analyzer on it, we don't know. And especially if we're adjusting gas pressure or air or anything like that, we should be always checking with an analyzer on startup, on maintenance. If you have to decommission a unit, if you have to and you can show the customer why, like this analyzer is showing it's not burning very well, I mean, we could have cracks, holes, whatever in the heat exchanger. The combustion analyzer is going to help determine all that kind of stuff. So we're lucky enough to get Nick Stoykovsky from Inficon on the podcast, and we're going to go through some tips and strategies and some best practices for using your combustion analyzer. Let's get to this, guys. This is the HVAC Know It All podcast. I'm your host, Gary McCready. This podcast is sponsored by Master, and guys, they got tons of training available. They got two training labs at their main facility in Vaughan, and they have some training labs scattered across the country of Canada as well. And they're starting to move into the US, guys. So US listeners, look for Master in the next few years, making a splash in the US. So if you're interested in training, getting to one of these labs, guys, reach out to your local sales rep or person at the local branch and get into some of these trainings. Check out master.ca. This podcast is sponsored by CentOS, and they provide uniforms that are blue collar for the blue collar trades. I mean, they got an array, guys. They have Carhartt stuff. They have some stuff that's expandable, stretchy, and comfortable. T-shirts, hats, whatever you guys need to keep the techs in your company warm, cool, whatever it is. So check out CentOS.com/HVAC Know It All if you want to check them out.
Welcome to the HVAC Know It All podcast. Recorded from a basement somewhere in Toronto, Canada. Your host and HVAC tech, Gary McCready, will take you on a deep dive into the industry, discussing all things HVAC. From storytelling to technical discussion. Enjoy the show.
How's it been? Last time we talked, we were talking whisper leak detection or ultrasonic leak detection with your whisper product. So how you been, man?
Very good. How have you been?
Amazing. So it's heating season now, and it's funny, every time heating season starts, or it doesn't matter what season it is, if it's the coldest day of the year or the hottest day of the year so far up to that point, everybody's going chaotic because my heat's not working, my cooling's not working. But in this case, we had a drop in temperature drastically. Like last week, we were at the beginning of the week, we were seeing some really nice, like actual summer-like temperatures. And then all of a sudden, it just dropped off like a stone. And everybody's turning on their furnaces and turning on their heat, commercial, residential. And it's like, my heat's not working. We need service. I find, for me, Nick, I find that October and November have always been the busiest times of the year for me, at least, or for the people that I've worked with and working for myself now. In this area of the world, October, November are the busiest times of the year. So, I mean, that's just because everybody's turning on their heat and they're realizing it's not working. I mean, exactly. if they check it in the middle of September, oh my God, my heat's not working in the middle of September. Now I can call someone and I got some time to figure things out. But now everybody's in panic mode, right? Because they got kids or they got elderly people, and you know what I mean? So it's just, I guess no one thinks about it. So
absolutely.
Anyway, man, combustion analysis. How important is it? Let's talk about it for a minute.
So, you know, combustion analysis is important, not only when just to do a checkup, I would say, on a furnace or boiler, any sort of combustion process, but, you know, it's important to to have it done when you have initial piece of equipment installed. You know, a lot of guys will go and say, yeah, I've set up the furnace, I've set up the boiler, everything looked good. You know, what's your gas pressure? It's fine. And so those type of statements are, yeah, maybe you get lucky and you know, you get the most efficient burn or the perfect install without really looking at anything. But a lot of the times there's really no way to tell if I have installed correctly, or if I do have good gas pressures, or making sure that my draft pressures are all right in my system, to make sure that, you know, the piece of equipment's doing what it's designed to do. So having a combustion analyzer is a key part of having that visibility into what's going on in the combustion process.
Yeah, no, for sure. And what you said is true. Doing a startup that involves combustion analysis, so you have a baseline of the way that machine is supposed to run on day one, if it starts up okay, right? If it starts up fine and you make the adjustments you need, and now we have specs, now we have our results from the combustion analysis that lay within the specifications of the manufacturer. We note that somewhere. And this is where I've always hated when people write on units like changed blower motor February 2007. I don't know. It just feels kind of weird to have all these notes inside of a unit. But yeah, where I do like these notes is if you do it somewhere discreet on the inside of a panel that no one can see except for the service guy taking it off and turning it around and seeing it, is startup numbers, right? Mm-hmm. Like the static pressure, the combustion analysis, the gas pressure, all of those numbers written neatly, discreetly somewhere on the inside of a panel, then it's always there for anybody that comes back and sees it. And they can always use that as a reference and compare. And if we start to deviate from those numbers, then we have to try to get it back to day one startup specs, right?
Yeah, exactly. And just to kind of add to that, you know, a lot of the combustion analyzers that you'll see now, most of them should come with some sort of printer. You know, ours, we actually have an app. So that way, if you can scan a QR code, and just without even printing, you can use the app to store, log, and share any of the jobs that you've done. So that way you can recall those, or you can tie it to a printer. And a lot of times what you'll find is some guys will just tape that report right to the furnace. And then it'll all be day coded for them with all of the readings there. So there's no question. You can kind of tell the health of the system as you do these combustion analysis over time, or these checkups.
Yeah. So how does the app work? Cause I didn't realize there was an app that we could save them to.
Yeah, so if you just download the FluMate app,
okay,
there, it does a few things. One of the things it'll do is actual just job logging. So when you go and use the combustion analyzer, you've saved your report. You can pull up a QR code that will show on the screen, and then your camera on your phone, you'll just hover over that QR code, and it'll just adopt that, or it'll bring that report right into the app and populate a report without even, you don't have to use any sort of Bluetooth for that. So it makes it kind of nice in case, you know, you're in a pinch, you're in a hurry, you just want to, you know, get this report done really quick. And again, you can add all of the, you know, all of your job information, whether it's location, the name of the job, those types of data points, in addition to the combustion analysis. That makes it easy. You know, it's really about just making it easy for the tech. And the other part that is nice with the FluMate app is you can see live data, what's going on in the combustion process. So say you have a flue somewhere where it's up tucked away, and maybe you can't really get to the screen on the FluMate because the hose might not be long enough for that application. Well, what you can do is use the Bluetooth part of it, and you can see live data, you know, the live readings on your phone while you're making an adjustment to a gas valve or checking something else to make sure that, you know, you're in range, whatever spec you're looking at. So a couple of tips and tricks there to, you know, especially with our FluMate that makes it a little easier. So that way you're not tied to just one single device without any help.
So let's talk about, so that's very cool. I like the fact that we can do that. I mean, everything is going app based these days, and it makes for the tech to be more efficient, I think. I mean, just from my experience using tools that like basically connect to an app, and we can see everything going on a screen, and we can show customers, or we can take screenshots, or like you said, use the QR code. But let's start with opening up the combustion analyzer, right? And yep. you're gonna relate this to your product, because that's the product you know. What are our steps before even taking before even turning on the machine and taking a combustion analysis? What are our steps to getting to that point?
I think the first thing we want to make sure we don't do is we take any sort of electronic and stick it into 300 degrees right away, right? That's not good for, you know, the sensors and the device, the electronics. So a lot of times when you're doing a furnace, right, we just said it's cold outside. So a lot of the times you're going to have these combustion analyzers sitting in a truck where it's really cold. So the first thing is to make sure that you're not, you know, you're going to let this thing warm up before you use the device, or you just shove the probe into a flue. That's just going to make sure that the device kind of acclimates, the sensors can acclimate, and you get a decent reading without, you know, destroying the device or hurting the device in any way. And that goes for ours, and I would say any analyzer that you're using.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
You know, the next thing is to really make sure you know where your intake air is coming from. So some guys will, you know, start a unit inside, and that's okay if it's an atmospheric system. But if you've got, an intake from outside on a high efficiency type of application, you don't want to start that unit inside the house where it's going to read 60 degrees, 70 degrees ambient air, because that's important in the combustion calculation. And that's important in measuring the efficiency or the delta between the intake and the exhaust. And so making sure that you know where that's coming from, that's important. Not just knowing that where it's coming from, but making sure that's the data point that you save as the intake air. And so when I walk out of my truck, what I want to do is start the device. And so on ours, you'll see a countdown. And basically, that's just kind of going through its initial startup. And then it's going to request for you to save the ambient air. And so when you do that, you'll be able to just click save, and then that'll populate and save the intake air data that you'll need, or the temperature that you'll need.
That makes a lot of sense when you say it like that. So basically turn it on outside, let it suck in the ambient air, and then save whatever that ambient air is, and then go inside and make your analysis.
Right, exactly. And again, that just depends on where the intake air is coming from. Like I said, if it's an atmospheric system and it's using the air from the basement, well, that's where we'll store that data. But it's still important to start the combustion analyzer as soon as you walk out of your truck, because by the time you really start that process, or you start taking that reading, you've probably given yourself enough time to where that has already warmed up, and you won't have to do it just sitting next to the furnace or sitting next to the boiler. It's not additional time you'll have to wait. So in terms of just saving yourself a little time, that's a neat little trick you can just do. Just, you know, even honestly with leak detectors too, it's any tool that you're about to use, just give it time to warm up, especially when it comes to sensors.
Mm-hmm. Now, going back to what you first said about bringing the tool inside and letting it acclimate, should we bring it inside first and let it kind of warm up before bringing it outside to take that snapshot?
So the only thing I'll say about that is when you're taking, you need the fresh air to almost, it's not a warm up, but you're letting the device acclimate almost. I wouldn't say a calibration, but it's using fresh air to in its warm up process. Mm-hmm. So what can happen is you don't know if there is an ambient CO level inside the house. So if I start my device inside the house and I have a background of maybe, let's say, 6 or 7 PPM of CO, that's going to skew some of my readings when I go and take my, you know, my sample from the flu. So it's always a good idea to make sure that you're in clean air. And the only way to really know that is if you're outside. The device is going to continue to warm up if you're outside. And like I said, as you start to walk in, you know, by the time you get down to the furnace, it should be, it's going to be at a temperature that's, it's okay to operate with. You know, the other thing that, that happens, and with ours, that's nice, is we have an ambient CO monitor incorporated into the combustion analyzer. So say I start my device outside, I can now use that almost as a protection device as I walk into a room or I walk into a house to make sure as a tech that I'm protecting myself and I'm not walking into a dangerous, you know, environment, whether it's low or high levels of CO2. It's not just, you know, it's not always how much CO is there. But it's more, it could be how long I'm exposed even to lower levels. So, you know, if I've got 10 or 20 PPM, but I'm working in that area for a few hours, that can also be pretty damaging. So, having that CO, ambient CO monitor, you know, is a nice feature to really protect yourself.
Okay. I got a question. Yeah, no, for 100%, because I mean, you could be working in a confined area or smaller space and CO could be building and you wouldn't know it. So it's always a good idea to have a monitor with you when you're working on heating appliances. But mm-hmm. I have a question about the room monitor. So if you're taking a combustion analysis, is this mm-hmm. the CO room monitor separate from that will show up on a separate line?
So we're in this time and age right now where contractors are having a real hard time finding skilled people, even warm bodies to fill positions that they can train. That's why I've been kind of successful utilizing commercial companies and subbing out, because they don't even have enough guys. So they rely on subs to fulfill their work. So if you're having this kind of trouble finding the right candidates to work in your company and you haven't checked out WiseHire, just check them out, give them a chance. You can come up with an ad real quick. And on the back end, they have experts that will optimize the ad to find the right people you're looking for. So check out wisehire.com.
When so you're taking an analysis, or do you got to go in first with the CO?
So there's an ambient CO setting that's separate from the analysis.
Okay.
And that's going to give you the CO reading and then your max CO level.
Okay.
And so you can access that just through the menu, so you get that running, and then as you walk into the room, it's going to again save that max CO concentration, and then you can see a live level. Once you know you're in an okay and safe space, you can then start your combustion analysis process by, you know, tapping into the flue and then making sure that, you know,
So it's a separate setting than an analysis of the machine. Okay.
Yes.
Perfect. All right. So you're making a good point about starting the thing up in clean air so it can sample clean air and then detect anomalies that could be inside or in a flue later on. So perfect mm-hmm. on that. So, I mean, there's different kinds of appliances out there. Like we have these high efficiency appliances that have induced draft motors. We have natural draft equipment. We have power vented combustion blowers. There's different, I guess, scenarios and applications. So mm-hmm. do you want to maybe pick one that you're most comfortable with and walk us through maybe taking a combustion analysis on that type of appliance?
Sure. So I think the first thing to mention with any of these is they're all going to have different ranges, whether it's an atmospheric gas fired or high efficiency power burner type of application, they're going to have ranges. And with us, we include a reference sheet for the tech to kind of make it easy to make sure that you fall within these ranges. But it's always good to refer to the manufacturer specs. A lot of the times they'll have them in their manual. So getting familiar with the piece of equipment that you're working on is important to make sure that you're within the ranges. And so a lot of the times, you know, when you want to start your combustion process, just make sure that, you know whether, like I said, it's an atmospheric condition or it's if it's a high efficiency and it's going to take a sample from outside, that's important. because again, you need to have the proper intake temperature stored in the initial sample. The next thing, you know, just making sure where you're placing that, where you're placing the probe itself. You know, keeping it, you know, 12 inches above where the exit port of the boiler is going to be a nice distance. That's the reference range or the reference distance that you'll actually tap into, unless you find access ports. Some of the newer pieces of equipment, you'll see the combustion or the flue probe access ports already, both on the intake side and the and on the exhaust side. So if you do have those access ports, that's a really good, that's exactly where you would use.
And some of those access ports are less than 12 inches away from where the burn is happening too. Right. So I've noticed.
Yeah. That so, yeah. And again, that's one of those things where I would make sure that, you check with the manufacturer just to make sure, you know, you're at the right distance, for them. Like I said, if they have the access ports there, it's okay to use those. That's what they're meant to, you know, to do. That's what that is what their intended use is. So, So the next thing is making sure that you're not jamming the probe all the way to the back of the pipe inside. So you want to make sure when you insert the probe, you can hit that back wall, but then just back it off halfway to make sure that you're kind of in the center of the flue, or just to make sure that you get a proper reading and it's not blocked by anything. It's just a nice laminar condition going across the probe.
Yeah, and one of the things that I find helps too is if the appliance has been up and running for 10 minutes, 15 minutes or whatever, and it's at a steady state, even moving that probe until you find the hottest spot, right, will usually help as well. Because usually that hottest spot is where you're going to get the best reading of that combustion gas.
Right. So, you know, the next thing I would say is just making sure. So for us, we have a dual port manometer. So we've got a negative side manometer and a positive side on the device itself. Make sure that you're plugged into the right side. For us in the U.S., we usually use the positive side. And that's going to make sure that when we do get a reading or we're taking a draft measurement, we're going to see, you know, we're actually going to see the true value. If it's, you know, if it's a negative draft reading, we're going to see that. If you have it on the negative side, it'll actually revert that to it'll be a positive reading that you'll see. So making sure that you have that on the right side is going to be, you know, important to looking at and comparing specs. Mm-hmm. So just making sure that you have that is important.
Okay, cool. Now, I do know that you have a cheat sheet there. Yep. And I know that, well, let's stick with like a residential high efficiency furnace. Do you want to maybe grab that cheat sheet and go over some of the general readings that you might see? Like, obviously, like we said, we always got to revert back to the manufacturer and what they say is appropriate for that specific appliance. But if you want to look at your cheat sheet and tell us for a high efficiency furnace, like what our O2 would be, our CO, our CO2.
Let's start with CO. Okay. Because, you know, that's one of the things that can actually damage the device.
Okay.
So you want to stay less than 100 ppm. But when you look at a stoichiometric curve, it doesn't take much to jump, you know, to make that CO level jump high. So if I'm running too fat with my gas pressures, or I have too much fuel to say in the combustion process, I can create quite a bit of CO. And that's, again, it's not only it can damage a device, but it's dangerous, right? So if somebody's running too high in their CO levels and say they have a, let's say for some reason there's a pipe disconnected somewhere on the flue, that can get pretty dangerous pretty quick. For a high efficiency gas fired type of application, you know, you want to stay less than 100 ppm. So, you know, again, you'll see that on the device itself, but if, you know, being less than 100 ppm is the acceptable range. For us, we actually do have a shutoff in the device itself. So if it sees 400 ppm, the pump in the device will actually stop, so you don't poison the sensor. If you do see that, you pull it out, make a little bit of an adjustment, try and take another sample again. And again, the more you expose the sensors to the, you know, the CO, the more they're going to degrade. So the other part we haven't mentioned yet, and we'll get into, is, you know, you got to make sure you stay up on these combustion analyzers. You need to make sure that you do your annual calibrations on them to make sure you're getting decent readings or accurate readings.
No, 100% for sure. And let's go back to the CO. So does the FluMate pick up air-free CO? And
yes.
Okay, so we should probably talk about that, because when you say 100 ppm, we want 100 ppm or less of air-free CO, right?
Exactly. And you'll see that right on, on the screen, on the combustion analysis, it'll see CO free. And that's your CO reading. But yeah, just making sure that you have less than 100 ppm air-free CO is important.
Okay. So let's stick with the same appliance and go through some of the other readings we might see, like O2,
So for your O2, let's say a high efficiency, 5 to 7% is an acceptable range. If you're going a little too high or a little too low, you can really start to screw with some of the efficiency, because now I have an excess, too much O2 means that I'm not using that in my combustion process. So I don't have the proper mix, and I'm not utilizing everything that I can and getting the most efficient burn. So sticking with that 5 to 7% is the proper range that I would stay in.
Okay. So what other numbers do we have on that cheat sheet you got in front of you there?
So carbon dioxide is another one that we have. Yep. 7 to 9% is
7 to 9, okay.
The acceptable range for high efficiency gas fired. And then the next thing is the stack temperature is, 125 degrees is a good stack temperature for for the high efficiency. Now that's going to change pretty drastically for, let's say an atmospheric style or an oil fire. I mean, those can be pretty hot. So just making sure that you're aware of that. A lot of times, you're going to see the metal flue versus more of a PVC. The reason why in the high efficiencies you'll see the PVC is because your stack temperatures are going to be a little different. So
yeah, and we're also going to condensate too, and we don't want to corrode any sort of metal stack, right?
Exactly. And then the other readings that you'll see is the draft, the stack drafts. Negative 0.02 to negative 0.08 inches of water column is, what we recommend. But we do say, if you want to make sure you check with your manufacturer specs on that one, because they can vary a little bit.
Always go back to the manufacturer specs. So, I mean, having these readings here on this cheat sheet are pretty helpful. They're basically baseline references, right? You're not always going to see these numbers. They're just generalized numbers to help you get in the ballpark. And then if you see anything that's outside of these manufacturer specs, say, hey, maybe it's okay. Because I've worked on some boilers. You look up the specs, or you call tech support and ask what the CO reading should be. And they say up to 400 ppm is acceptable for the CO reading. And I've seen that with a few different types of boilers in the past. So, I mean, yeah, you always got to call the manufacturer and
right.
Figure that out.
That's why we say, check with the manufacturer. But, when you use these as a general, reference, though, it gives you, like you said, a ballpark. But when you see something pretty wacky or a number that's way out of range, you can start to use that to really dive into what's going on. I mean, if I start seeing some weird numbers and I'm just not making sense, I start checking drafts to make sure I don't have any blockages or let's say somebody, you know, you're going and you show up to a job and you can, you know, you don't know what's going on. You didn't do the installation. You walk outside and you see the intake sitting right next to the exhaust. And you now, you know, that happens all the time, right? And mm-hmm. we have pictures of that everywhere. So, again, you'll start to see some wacky readings with something like that, to where using those numbers or using this reference sheet really is going to help you kind of dive into some of those problems.
Okay. So let's talk about, for the last few minutes here, let's talk about maintaining the combustion analyzer, because I mean, we're going to pull in moisture. I mean, is there draining ports on these things? Like, just give us some, I know calibration is key. Is there, what is our steps to maintaining the analyzer on the off season, or during the season, just to make sure it's running at peak performance?
Absolutely. So one of the things to make sure that you do is when you're done with your combustion analysis, you want to make sure you pull that probe out of the flue. The reason why you want to do that is because you want to give it time to clear. You don't want to leave any of the flue gas in there, because if you do have the CO or any of the other, you know, oxygen, you know, is always going to be there no matter what. But the CO is really, it can degrade with that gas sitting inside the device. So letting it purge, let it run is going to be important to clearing the device. Ours actually will run a purge when you do shut it down. So just let it go through that purge cycle. Don't hit skip. You do have the option to skip, but that's more so if, you know, you've just messed with it, not performing a combustion analysis, more of just trying to play with it. You can quickly hit skip there. But the next thing I would say is when you're done, obviously we've got a lot of condensation from performing a combustion analysis. You want to make sure that you dump any of the water that has accumulated into the water traps. Letting it sit there isn't good for anybody. You know, definitely not the devices, you know, especially the ones where you have the water traps sitting inside of the units themselves, because that can get into the electronics. Say there's not a great seal there. So making sure that you just empty that water is going to be important. The next thing is making sure you're looking at the filters. The combustion can be a pretty dirty process. So you want to make sure that you change those filters out regularly. You don't want to, you know, have a blockage of anything, especially the intake, you know, or the exhaust of the, you know, the flue gases. You don't want to have a blockage there, and you want the gases, you know, you want to allow the gases to make their way into the combustion analyzer. So making sure your filters are changed is important. And then the next thing is making sure that all of your connections are tight. So with the probe, you want to make sure that's sealed. You want to make sure the only gas that's getting in is the flue gas. You don't want to make sure any of the outside gases, or let's just say fresh air, is making its way into any other part of the probe, because that's going to alter your calculation. That's going to alter your readings. So for us, what we're able to do is we have a flue or a probe test, where we actually have a rubber cap that you'll put on the end of the probe itself, and mm-hmm. it'll run a vacuum basically to make sure that it's leak tight. And so we'll tell you if the sensors are good, and we'll also tell you if you have a leak in your probe.
Nice.
That's important, because, you know, say you are having an issue and you do need to give us a call, we can run these tests with you just to make sure that this, you know, we can do process of elimination before you really have to send the analyzer in. And again, it's important to make sure all of these pieces are working and your sensors are up to date, because otherwise, you know, you may get some skewed readings, not just with ours, but anybody's. You know, sensors are sensors. They are what they are. You know, they do degrade over time, and especially with exposure to the gases. So making sure you keep up on them is very critical.
Okay. So when it comes to calibration, what do you suggest? How do you suggest it? I mean, somebody could purchase your FluMate and they could be all over the place. So do we have to send these to Inficon? Can we go somewhere else? Like, what is that process?
You can go to your distributor. You can call Inficon. We actually have a service menu that you can access that you know, it has our email address and our contact info right in there. You can call that number and you will get guidance on how to send it in. You know, we say within 5 business days, we'll get it back to you. So,
oh, that's pretty good.
We know that these tools are important. When you need them, and you can't really be without them. So I would say it's always a good idea to do this before the season, because manufacturers are going to get a flood of combustion analyzers in season from people who have waited. And, you know, you just run a risk of, you know, getting jammed up. So I would say make sure that you do it before the season, just to make sure you have your device, it's working, it's going, you know, and everything's going to work out well for you. So you don't, it's one less thing to worry about during the actual season.
Yeah. And I mean, having a backup, just like a batteries, just like anything, having a backup analyzer is super important, because I mean, things do fail at, I mean, any, you could drop it. I mean, you could have, who knows, you could leave it in your truck and freeze it out and the condensation could destroy or crack something within. I mean, it's always good to have a backup tool. I mean, even a vacuum pump, even a recovery machine. You get to a job, you got to pull a vacuum. Oh, my vacuum pump's dead. Great. Now what do I do? So it's always good to have backups of things. I know that the upfront cost is not, I mean, it's not easy to absorb at all times, but I mean, in the long run, that investment is probably going to pay off at some point. So that's just my suggestion. It just from being in this industry for 25 years and being run up against situations where my tool has had a problem and now I got to call the shop 2 hours away. Hey, can you get me a vacuum pump? No, I can't. it's just one of those things. You're stuck, right? So, I mean, anything else to throw in here at this point, Nick, as far as, I mean, we've covered starting the thing up. We've covered maintenance. Yep. We've covered some general ideas of what we should be reading on a high efficiency furnace. I mean, we can't talk about every single appliance on this particular, right. This particular conversation. Yeah. The list is endless. So if there's anything you think you feel is important about combustion analysis, I mean, throw it in now and we'll just wrap this up.
Yeah, like I said, just making sure that you understand how the device is working, the different tests that you have on the device itself, whether it's a cracked heat exchanger test or it's a, you know, a regular analysis, ambient CO, understanding the capabilities, understanding the ranges of the analyzer that you're trying to use. Is important based off of what systems you're using. So not just, you know, the different flavors we talked about, but the difference between a commercial, you know, an industrial and a residential. That's important to make sure that you have the right tool for the job, so to speak. So, so understanding all of that is important.
You said cracked heat exchanger test. What is that exactly?
So we run a cracked heat exchanger test. Basically, it's a test that you use just to make sure that without having to pull out the heat exchanger or actually do a, you know, look at it physically, you're able to just kind of take a peek just through looking at some of the levels.
Okay. So that's a setting within the tool.
Yep. Okay. And so to perform the test, like I said, we have another cheat sheet or a reference guide, and that'll show you exactly how to perform the test. But if you go into the settings, you know, you can see the levels that are there, and that's going to show you how to exactly do the test.
Yeah, and I mean, that is, everybody should be looking for ways to be more efficient in their job. And performing a test like this, right, is a lot more efficient than trying to rip a unit apart. I mean, let's say on rooftop equipment, it's just, most of the time it's very easy. It's a panel. You take the panel off and you can go, oh, there's the heat exchanger right there. On boilers, sometimes it's easy to check the heat exchanger. If atmospheric boilers, you can just get in there, pull the burner out, look up, and there it is. But I mean, when it comes to certain applications, like a residential furnace, it's a pain in the butt to try to check a heat exchanger properly. Exactly. Even you can get a camera in there, yes, but it's not as good of a visual as like pulling it out and looking down at the whole thing.
Right. So this, I mean, we're actually measuring, you know, O2. That's the reading that we're we're using. So, I mean, what we'll do is say, you know, allow the furnace to warm up, and then you want to get a stable O2 reading. And then, so you want the appliance or the blower to turn on automatically. And then you're looking basically for a difference in the oxygen.
Yeah.
And you want to see a difference, you know, of greater than, let's say, 0.5%. Because, you know, now you're actually sucking due to the pressure differences, you're actually taking some of the oxygen out of the space. And with that difference in the O2 reading, you can actually tell whether you have a cracked heat exchanger.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And just for some of the newcomers to this, what Nick is saying is we basically turn the furnace on. We get the burner going, and we have our combustion analysis probe in there. And then when the blower starts up, it's going to pressurize the duct system in the cabinet. So that pressure is going to affect the pressure that's in the heat exchanger if there's a crack, because basically we're going to infiltrate that positive pressure into that heat exchanger, and we should see that O2 reading change on our combustion analyzer. Is basically that's what you're saying, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then, so you want to make sure that you try that a few times, because it's going to be a little different. It's not, I wouldn't say that it's bulletproof, but it's a really good indication that you have a problem, right? And so without having to go in and pull everything out, it gives you a way to really try it. You know, it gives you a way to see if you have an issue without getting too crazy.
So I'm going to throw this in there just as a bit of a tidbit of information. So I remember this rooftop I was working on many, many years ago, and the burner would light up and it looked like it was fine. And then when the blower started, the burner would kind of roll back out.
Oh.
Right. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, that's weird. So go check the heat exchanger. Heat exchanger's got like some big holes in it. So basically that blower starting up was pushing all that air into the heat exchanger and pushing the burner outside, and it was basically causing it to roll out for a split second as it fired up and became steady again. So, I mean, you can even see that as a visual sometimes, but using the analyzer is going to get kind of hone in and give you a better indication, especially if it's a smaller type crack.
If it's a sealed, small sealed residential system, sometimes, yeah, you're right, that's going to be tougher to see.
All right, Nick, I appreciate this, man. My phone has been going crazy. I just had like two calls come in, or I don't know if they're actual service calls, but my phone's been ringing this whole time we've been talking, because more and more people have been starting up their furnace and it's not heating. So looks like I've got my work cut out for me for the rest of the day.
All right. Well, it sounds good. I appreciate you having me on. It's always a pleasure, Gary.
Yeah. Yeah, Nick, for sure, man. Thank you very much.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Follow HVAC Know-It-All on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere else Gary feels like popping up. This has been a Two Smokes and a Coffee production.